In September, the State Department of Health announced that the state's youth smoking rate had reached an all-time low, with less than 3% of high school students purportedly smoking cigarettes in 2020. To discuss this data, including what it means and how the state got to this point, we're joined by Sarah Phelps, Assistant Director of the state's Bureau of Tobacco Control. Hello, Sarah.
Hi there. Thanks for having us.
And also with us is Haven Battles, Assistant Director of the Bureau of Chronic Disease Evaluation and Research. Welcome, Haven.
Thanks for having us, David.
So, Haven, can you give us some context about the current smoking rate of high schoolers, which was 2.4% in 2020? For example, how does that compare to recent data, and what kind of long-term trends, if any, are you finding?
Sure. I'll start with a little context for how we collected that information. The State Department of Health administers the New York State Tobacco Control Program, and one of the primary goals is to reduce youth initiation of tobacco products. So we measure that with a statewide survey that we conduct every other year, starting in the year 2000.
So you're not just visiting high school bathrooms and checking out
who's getting up to no good?
Okay, gotcha. A little more scientific.
We do hear about that from our own kids.
Gotcha.
Well, we survey middle and high school students throughout the state to ask about their tobacco products and related topics. So in 2020, we surveyed about 4,000 students, and we found, as you said, our youth high school smoking rate was at its lowest ever at 2.4%. When we started the survey back in the year 2000, that rate was at 27.1%. So over a quarter of students back in 2000 reported being current smokers. And so we're very happy to see it get down below 3%.
I'm curious, considering it's a survey, did the pandemic impact your ability to collect data in 2020?
Yeah, that's a great question. We started our data collection in January of 2020, and normally it would have gone through May. We did have to shut it down in March when the schools closed. So we had done some analyses to make sure we felt comfortable with the data we had collected, to make sure it was representative of students throughout the state. And we do feel comfortable with that. So, again, we were able to get 4,000 students. We typically get 8,000. But 4,000 is still a really good sample size. In terms of how the pandemic itself may have affected prevalence, again, because these data came in before the shutdown and when things were just starting, we don't think that was a major factor, but it's something we'll find out in our next round.
You also examined the use of e-cigarettes by high schoolers. What did you find out about vaping rates among teens?
Yeah, so we started measuring vaping rates in 2014, and when we started, it was already up to 10% of high school students who were current vaping product users. By 2018, that had increased to over 27%, very similar to that older cigarette rate that I just referenced. And then in 2022, it came down for the first time to 22.5%. So it's still higher than we'd like it to be, obviously, but it was encouraging to see it starting to move in the right direction.
I'm curious whether the lower rates of teen smokers translates to lower rates of smoking by adult New Yorkers. Are you seeing any correlation in this gradual decrease?
We are. It's another really great question. We have adult surveys that are continuously in the field that measures our adult smoking rate. And we do see among 18 to 24-year-olds in particular that their rate has really come down. They used to be higher than the general population back in 2011, and by 2018, they were considerably lower than the general population. So we really are seeing if kids don't start smoking as kids, they probably aren't starting as adults either.
And we've been talking about tobacco consumption through smoking primarily, but obviously there are other ways to get tobacco. Do you have any data or do you collect any data on other forms of tobacco consumption?
We do. We ask about, we try to keep it current with whatever we know is in the field at the time. So we certainly ask about cigars, smokeless tobacco, snuff, things of that nature. And so that contributes to our overall tobacco use rate, which is a combination of cigarettes, vaping products, and those other tobacco products I just mentioned. And that remains at 25.6% for high school students, which is about what it was back in 2000, 2002, just with a different balance of products. So we really do need to keep our efforts up.
And diving a little deeper into that top line number, the demographics of kids who are smoking, are there any groups that stand out, whether it's race or gender or parts of the state?
Yeah, our rates are a little higher in upstate than they are in New York City. Not a huge difference. We definitely need to continue the work in both places. We tend to see higher cigar use, for example, among males, young males. We're not seeing a lot of difference by race at this point. And then with youth, it's a little tricky to collect some of the demographic indicators that we collect with adults. So they're not able to report on their income. They're still in school, so we're not looking at educational level differences, but we do see some differences.
So Sarah, pivoting to how we got to this point, can you talk about some of the state policies that you think have contributed to the current youth smoking rates being where they are now compared to, say, 2000?
Absolutely. That's a really important point to make, and I think one, you know, that can be really summed up most easily by saying, you know, this is a culmination of a lot of things working well together. There's really no one single strategy that's led to these results, but we have a large body of evidence in tobacco control that points to the critical nature of having a comprehensive program and a comprehensive approach. So we're fortunate in that we know what works, and we're fortunate in having a strong history here in New York of having, you know, really strong fidelity to that science. In terms of, you know, recent policy and environmental changes that happened, you know, within the last few years in New York, you know, there was the issue of EVALI in the summer of 2019, and that's when we were, you know, discovering across the country that people were falling ill and even dying from what appeared to be something related to vaping products. It was determined, you know, that was a vitamin E acetate additive to THC-containing cigarettes, so it really wasn't specific to the nicotine-based e-cigarettes. However, it certainly was cause for alarm across the country. And so that was, you know, certainly one event that happened just, you know, in terms of the environmental context in 2019. That same year, we also in New York State and then nationally passed what we call the T21 law, and that's where the minimum age of purchase was raised to 21 years of age. Also in 2019, there was a 20% sales tax added to vapor products here in New York State. And then in 2020, the FDA instituted a ban on flavored e-cigarette products for the pod or cartridge-based e-cigarettes nationwide. So quite a few, you know, significant changes happening just over the course of a year or two. So when we're looking at that, you know, initial reduction that we saw during this last round of survey collection, those were some really significant policy efforts. In terms of, you know, the approach that we take here in New York State, and again, it's really closely tied to the best practices. You know, we know that there are some really important things to keep in mind. One is keeping the price of tobacco products high. Another is making sure that there's a strong Clean Indoor Air Act, which we've had here in place in New York State since 2003. Making sure that we're restricting access to tobacco products. So both, you know, the marketing of these tobacco products that can draw new customers in, but also just access to the sheer volume of products. And then, you know, making sure that we also have effective cessation services available for people who are ready and able to quit.
So I'm glad you mentioned the age restriction on purchasing cigarettes, which is now 21 in New York. You know, in the light of that law taking effect in 2019, it seems, if everyone's following the law, that we should have a smoking rate of, you know, 0% for the high school kids. So how are high school kids still getting tobacco products?
Something that we are still looking at, you know, here as well as, you know, really around the country, because this is certainly not unique to New York State. We do collect some information, and actually Haven can speak to some specific studies that we've done on that front.
Yeah, the same survey that we draw the rates from asks some questions about their source of tobacco product acquisition. And social sources are really popular and important for youth. And so one of the theories behind raising the age of T21 is getting it out of the hands of high school youth. If you can get it only legal for a 21-year-old to purchase it, it's less likely to get in the hands of the high school youth. But social sources are very important at this age.
And Sarah, there's obviously a budget for tobacco control that you have to pursue some of these initiatives. How do you use the money that is put aside each year for these efforts to combat smoking in New York?
That's a great question. And again, we're really proud of our alignment with CDC's best practices, including, you know, budget allocations. You know, resources are, you know, extremely important to keep, you know, use of those judiciously. And we definitely align, like I said, as much as possible with CDC's recommendations. So we've got allocations for media that's running, you know, both through, you know, TV ads, but as well as digital and print and out-of-home ads. We've got a portion of the budget set aside for quitline and other cessation services. A lot of effort really at the community and prevention level too. So we actually fund community grantees across the state with quite a bit of resources that's really, really instrumental in affecting some of this change locally, because we know that really trickles up to the state level. So a lot of the things that we just talked about that we're really working on at the state level are also occurring in communities across the state. We've actually got some really important policy efforts happening and community change efforts happening on the local level. So our grantees that are working across the state are looking at the retail environment. You know, New York and localities have the ability to look at the number, type, and location of retailers in their communities as it plays a part in tobacco use rates, also looking at price, looking at flavors. There's a lot of effort happening in terms of tobacco-free outdoor efforts, because we know that plays a significant role in social norms as well as secondhand smoke exposure, and also smoke-free housing. Again, smoke-free housing really plays a pivotal role in both social norm structure and secondhand smoke exposure. So we're really investing a lot in our communities across the state as well as at the state level. And another really strong component of our work is dedicated to evaluating the effectiveness of our program. We invest, you know, significantly in making sure that what we're doing is effective, that what we're doing, you know, is the best use of our resources. And we look at that, you know, on multiple levels on an annual basis to make sure that we're always refining our strategies and using our dollars most judiciously.
Are there any outreach efforts or any local cessation efforts that you think you could pursue if you had additional resources or would like to pursue? Because I ask that in the context of the state holding tobacco control funding flat for a lot of recent years and, you know, only a fraction of what it was, say, pre-Great Recession.
A great question. It's not really directly in my role, you know, to make those types of determinations. And, you know, of course, we always, you know, can think of what we could do with more dollars and more resources. But we're definitely confident in what we're able to do with the resources that we do have at hand. As I said before, we really closely align our efforts with the best practices recommended by CDC and other federal and national partners. We're actually often looked to as a comprehensive program by other states, and we partner with other states because of the successes that we've seen here in New York. And we're really proud of both following the science, but also kind of leading and sort of navigating in a new frontier in terms of, you know, identifying new best practices as well. So, you know, I really would just say continuing to do and continuing to use the formula that we've got in place now, I think is the best strategy to continue with moving forward. That's why we're so happy to see the results that we've seen that came out of this survey, because we're seeing the effectiveness of what we've applied so far and seeing it really come to fruition. And, you know, I don't want to lose sight of these numbers. It's a reduction in percentages, but what that really translates to is saving lives. You know, as you even mentioned earlier, you know, this does have an influence on adult rates. You know, when we see the youth rates coming down, that's a really good indication that the adult rates are also going to be coming down. And that ultimately translates to saving lives. So we're really proud of that.
And finally, with recreational marijuana sales likely to begin next year in New York, do you anticipate your campaigns aimed at young people will have any sort of overlap with campaigns aimed at preventing underage marijuana consumption?
That is a great question. This is something that we have been looking at and thinking about for some time. You know, New York is certainly not the first state to legalize adult use cannabis. So we are working closely with the new Office of Cannabis Management And for example, yes, both programs have a similar goal to ensure that tobacco and cannabis products are not targeted to youth or used by youth. So we really look forward to continuing with those goals.
Well, we've been speaking with Sarah Phelps. She's the Assistant Director of the state's Bureau of Tobacco Control, and Haven Battles, Assistant Director of the Bureau of Chronic Disease Evaluation and Research. Sarah and Haven, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
Thanks for having us.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.